Heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome into a Monday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. The Brooklyn Nets are 2-1. Josh, as always, is undefeated in person this time. Josh, how's it going?
Gavin, I am feeling jubilation after the Nets 2-1 start, and I think we're going to keep that going, at least for a little bit, against the Orlando Magic tomorrow. But listen, the team's bounced back in the wake of Jeremy Lin's injury, and what more can I want?
Yeah, I'm going to preface all the conversation we have today with the premise that we're basically looking through this team with the NBA equivalent of beer goggles right now. They've only played bad teams, frankly, and they lost one of those games, but they've looked, at least offensively, really, really good, and for the most part, an improved defensive effort against an admittedly somewhat inept Hawks team. But there were a lot of standouts in this one.
Well, Orlando beat the Cavs, so technically, did we beat the Cavs?
I think we'll know for sure on Thursday, because we actually get to play the Cavs.
Wednesday? Yes.
All right, Wednesday it is. All right, yeah, so another big win for the Brooklyn Nets was 116-104. A lot of guys playing well. I know we normally save the segment for the end, but I think we should start off talking about him. Damari Carroll, excellent, and he was your boss player of the game.
Yes, he won his first bossy of the year. he changed the game. His energy, as we talked about, needed to pick up, and it really did, especially on the defensive end. Going against his former team, he kind of had the play that changed the game after Atlanta had gone on a big run to tie the game at 99. He blocked, I think it was Kent Bazemore's shot. It was like a jumper, and it's hard to block that, but his timing was impeccable to not foul him, and that led to D'Angelo Russell hitting Allen Crabbe for one of his 4 3-pointers of the game, and the Nets kind of never looked back after that.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing about Kenny Atkinson, and you really see it with Damari Carroll, is how much he empowers his players to shoot threes. And if he wasn't doing that along with empowering them to move the ball really well, that would completely backfire. But this team is really placing a premium on finding open shooters. And then when guys are in rhythm, with a couple of exceptions that we'll talk about later when the podcast goes on, they don't really hesitate. And I think Carroll is really kind of the best example of that, because in Toronto, his big complaint was that he didn't get the ball that much. And when he did, he kind of felt awkward shooting it, just because they had two totally ball dominant guys in Lowry and DeRozan. And now you see none of that hesitation. The big play for me was in the third quarter, where he saved it from going out of bounds, got it to Spencer Dinwiddie, immediately cut to the corner, had two Hawks running out on him, could have probably thrown a pass inside to Booker, but instead just didn't even really look at the two defenders charging him, rose up, got a lot of arc, a lot of rotation on a shot, and absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, and he also made the play that we're not even talking about yet, where he saved the ball from going out of bounds, hung in the air, and then was able to find Trevor Booker right underneath the basket for the N1, and that kind of helped the Nets balloon the lead up to 10 and kind of close this game out in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, some other positive bright spots. D'Angelo Russell continuing his strong run to start the season. And I think most importantly, not an incredible game in the turnover department, still at 4, but keeping them down a little bit while handing out 10 assists in addition to 16 points, 7 rebounds. So a near double-double for D'Angelo Russell. And there was a great Rucco stat from the game that I don't want to butcher, so I'm going to bring it up right now. But a friend of the podcast, Ryan Rucco, pointing this out. D'Angelo Russell, over the first two games of his Nets career, on over 15 shots in both, shot over 50%. That was the first time in his entire career that he did that in back-to-back games. And the fact that he did it in his first two with the Nets and then almost replicated that last night, 13 shots, 6 of 13 from the field, that is mighty impressive. And I think it's reflective of the fact that he's going to be more efficient in this Nets system than he was in LA.
Yeah, you have to hope so, just with the kind of players we have around D'Angelo Russell. More spacing, more room to operate. I think that the infrastructure is better. I think Luke Walton is a great coach out in LA, but I think everything with D'Angelo Russell that happened, going back to the Nick Young saga and Byron Scott kind of not really empowering him, I think that this has been a great chance for him to start over in Brooklyn.
Yeah, absolutely. Other guys who stood out, Caris LeVert having another really good effort, 5 of 9 from the field, shot 9 free throws, hit 6 of them, 16, 6, 4, 3 steals. He was just incredibly active. I had a bunch of different notes on him, but my big takeaway is that he still kind of plays that, for lack of a better term, Bambi style of basketball. Like, he's like a deer on ice skates. I know I'm mixing analogies there, but that really is what it looks like when he's running around. But and Ruko was kind of talking about this, but as he said to Josh, let me know if I get this wrong, Jim Spanarkle, the Nets color guy, he was great, by the way. I never heard him.
He is one of my favorite announcers. The chemistry that he has with some of the Nets guys is terrific. I think between obviously Ruko and Ian Eagle doing play-by-play, and then Spanarkle, now Sarah Kustok, and Fratello back in the studio, it's just a great team, and it really makes listening to that game very enjoyable.
Yeah, we haven't, I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but we haven't had a chance to really get into it, but Kustok spectacular in her first two games. And I love the fact that all the broadcasters kind of balance each other out. I'm sure we'll get some games with Ruko and Kustok and Eagle and Spanarkle. But I love Eagle's kind of like wry humor with Kustok, who's somewhat of a straight shooter, but also like willing to play along when he goes in that direction. And then Ruko's kind of the same way as Kustok, where he mostly plays it straight, but he's willing to kind of get into that territory. And Spanarkle's like always like the zany off the wall stuff. And Ruko kind of indulges in it, kind of brings it out in him. I love that in the broadcasting.
Yeah, and also shouts out to Michael Grady, who's now taking over Sarah's old role as the sideline reporter. He's doing a good job so far.
Can I just say, like, crazy voice on that guy. Like, I heard it for the first time. Like, oh, he should probably be the play-by-play guy. No shots at Ian Eagle or Ryan Ruko, but he just has that classic broadcasting voice. So, yeah, very excited to him. And he's doing really well in Who Am I so far. That's a big deal.
Yeah, that's obviously the most important part of his job. So
and the Nets team as a whole. Getting back into Nets basketball, though, yeah, it was Ruko kind of talking about that with Caris, and he just seems almost a little bit out of control at times. But I think that aggressiveness, more often than not, pays off for him, because a lot of times it results in drawing two defenders. And even as a young guy, and I think he's going to keep getting better and better at this, he's already shown both a willingness and an ability to drop it off to his teammates when he does get doubled, and even when he's moving really fast, which is impressive that he's able to read the game at the same speed that he's going, which is crazy fast. And then he's able to finish through traffic, or at least put up a good enough shot and draw enough defenders on it that the Nets have a really good chance of rebounding it and putting it back. And that was something that was a big theme throughout this game, and I think a lot of that comes from Caris's ability to attack the basket.
Yeah, the only thing I will say, obviously, he needs to improve his jump shot, but also his handle is a little bit sloppy. His dribble can be high at times, and that kind of leads to him being a little bit turnover prone. But that's something, he's still a young player, hasn't even had a full NBA season under his belt because he missed a lot of last year. So once he kind of gets more accustomed to the speed of the game and gets more actual game time reps, I think he's really going to improve on that.
Yeah, I put the same exact note in here that I noticed a couple times where he lost the ball on the dribble. All right, let's finish up with two more young guys while we're in the category of positive performances. Alan Crabb leading the Nets in scoring, 20 points, 5 rebounds, hit a big-time 3 down the stretch to all but seal it, 7 of 12 from the field, 4 of 7 from behind the arc, and you kind of start to get the feeling this is why the Nets were willing to overpay him, at least based on his previous production, because he is such a good fit in the system that prioritizes three-point shooting. And if he gets enough up, they think he's going to remain efficient. And tonight, obviously, he was hitting 4 out of those 7.
Yeah, he looked really good. I think the play you mentioned is a very tough play when you're someone's running out on you and closing out, and you pump fake, move to the side. It's a worse angle to shoot the three ball, and he still drained it. And that kind of gave the Nets a 7-point lead. But he looked really good relocating off the three-point line. Jared Allen, another guy that we're going to highlight. 4 blocks in 15 minutes, which is really spectacular. He seems to have great defensive instincts, really good timing, which is something you can't really teach for a player that young. And Brook Lopez, he has good timing also, but he always wasn't always able to get in position. But Allen is just a lot more athletic than him. I think we have a couple notes about him on offense. Doesn't seem to be too dynamic when he's under the rim trying to finish. He's the type of guy that kind of needs more of a running start. And then Gavin, I think you had a kind of a note on his pick and roll prowess in terms of his hands.
Yeah, well, that was just one thing I noticed, is both on pick and rolls and just like even like the little dump off passes to him where he was kind of just waiting around underneath the basket. He kind of struggled to control it. And I honestly think a big part of it, just because he did seem like, not that he showed off great hands, but he was just such a fluid guy at Texas, is probably nerves and like playing in just his second ever NBA basketball game, which, let's be honest, any single one of us would be freaking out, much less at age 19. But he wasn't consistently able to control the ball under the basket. I know this is something Spinarkle noted, and I saw as well. Bringing the ball down after rebounds, it's just an attitude of aggressiveness and really getting after it. Because the thing is, his arms are so long. He doesn't need to be an explosive jumper. And I think he still could be a pretty good jumper, especially as he gets more and more time in an NBA weight room. But he just has to be able to go up and be direct with the ball. I think everyone remembers that monster dunk he had at Texas over West Virginia last year. Even on that play, he didn't get off the ground that much, but he's just so tall to begin with, and his arms are so long, it doesn't really matter. He can yam on guys getting maybe 10, 12 inches off the floor, so he just has to have that be his focus, and I'm kind of interested to see if that hand issue goes away, because that's something, even going back to preseason, he was missing shots around the rim just because he couldn't really control the ball. I think he has pretty good touch when he does.
Yeah, but overall, Nets held Atlanta to 34% shooting, which is terrific and a lot better than they did the first two games, and definitely held Dennis Schroeder in check. And one guy I really want to highlight is Spencer Dinwiddie. He's such an instinctive defender. On the offensive end, zero turnovers in 19 minutes. That's huge. But also, there was one play where I think Caris LeVert lost his man a little bit coming around a screen. So the guy had the ball, and Dinwiddie just instinctively and seamlessly just picked him up, and it was that being able to switch so easily is such a huge part of the Nets' identity, and that's what Kenny Atkinson wants, and that's why they picked up a guy like Dinwiddie, who's 6'6", he's long, he kind of has a good idea of where to be on defense, and that's why they chose him instead of Yogi Ferrell, who's more of just an offensive player last year.
Yeah, the big thing for me is I'm kind of interested to see what their center rotation continues to look like, because they played Booker there quite a bit. Mozgov playing 18 minutes. I know he was 3 of 5 in the field and finished with plus 9. But I don't know. Just as far as the eye test goes, he looks kind of washed to me. So I'm not really set on him, but I guess there's only so many other options unless Jared Allen makes a big jump his rookie year.
Yeah, I think it's tough because you don't want to wear Booker down by playing him a lot of minutes at the five. And Allen's is definitely very talented, but he's not really ready to play more than like 15 minutes a game. So I think Mozgov needs to be in there. And he obviously is under contract for 3 more years and no one's going to take him. So it seems like he kind of has to be on this team, and you don't really want a guy like him kind of being pouting and being alienated from the team, because he does seem like a nice guy and like a decent locker room presence. And he has that experience. He's been on a team that got to the finals, and a championship team actually, right?
Yeah, he scored 28 points in the finals game, which I think everyone forgets.
Right, he played more in that first series that the Warriors won, I think. But he's someone that could kind of teach a guy like Jared Allen some tricks, just how to be a professional, how to be physical around the rim, because Mozgov's definitely a banger. So I think you have to play him about 15 minutes a game, which is kind of what he's been at so far. So it's going to be tricky for Kenny Atkinson to kind of manage these guys' minutes.
Okay, a few more, not throwaway notes, but I guess final notes that I took away from this game. Trevor Booker, I really liked one set Atkinson had for him that you kind of saw Dinwiddie call it. I think it was near the end of the second quarter. Where they basically they ran some kind of diversion, like it was like I think Crab or someone like running around the screen on the right side of the court, and Dinwiddie was kind of looking there, and it was almost like a play fake in football where like the entire defense's eyes are one side of the field, and then Dinwiddie shifted all of a sudden and he just got it to Booker in the high post, and it gave Booker like a ton of room to create. He immediately drove in, drew two defenders, and just kicked it out to I think it was Carroll or it might have been RHA for an open three. That was really cool, and then a bunch of other times they just set him out at the 3-point line, and the Hawks were nice enough to respect his shot out there, and they were coming up, and he was just throwing this little pump fake at them, going towards the basket, and then he's so good once he can drive and create for others. My only concern there is he has to be a little bit more willing to shoot that three ball, or I think defenders are going to start calling him out on it and just giving it to him, because there was one at the end of the second quarter where he was wide open, and then he passed it up, took a dribble, and traveled with only 4 seconds left, and that's the kind of shot that even if he's not going to make it, he has to be willing to take it.
Okay, so I actually completely disagree with you, because last year Booker was taking the 3-point shot a little bit more, and while he can make that, it's not a good shot for the offense. They can definitely get a lot better. So I think when he's giving that pump fake and has that head of steam and no one wants to get in his way, that's kind of where he's at his best, going downhill, drawing contact, finishing and ones, because he is so strong. He's such a beast. We make that comparison to LeBron's physique at all. I think if he's trying to get too fancy and play on the perimeter more and really spotting up from three, that's where the Nets offense is going to bog down. That's going to be a little bit different when he's at the playing the four, maybe next to a guy like Mozgov or Allen, because they need him to play outside more. But I think when he's at the five, I think being able to drive in and draw those mismatches against slower defenders is really key for him, and that's what's going to keep his efficiency up.
Right. Well, no, I think we agree. I think we just have different ways of going about it. I'm saying that's when he's at his best, but I don't know if he's going to be able to consistently do that if he doesn't hit some threes. But at a certain point, guys are just going to start totally disrespecting that pump fake, and they're going to play off him, and he's not going to have that leverage to drive. But who knows? Maybe he's fast enough to get into the lane anyways. He's certainly an asset for this Nets team, and I'm not sure if his play is totally sustainable, but him playing well is just so essential for them being good, because without Lin, he gives them kind of that extra boost of creativity and playmaking that's just lacking to some degree on this roster without Jeremy Lin. Yeah, I think that's just about all my takeaways. I'm going guy by guy. I like what Alan Crabb did. As always, he's just someone who, like, even when he doesn't necessarily move off the ball that much, he's just always ready to shoot. And there were a bunch of times where they just kick it out to him and he just go right away, and he's so quick. So I still think he's really an asset, even with Crabb in the rotation now.
Yeah, so some major NBA news today. Obviously, the Phoenix Suns fired their coach, Earl Watson, and it seems like Eric Bledsoe has demanded a trade, and he's gotten dismissed from the Suns right now, according to GM Ryan McDonough. Gavin, you obviously spent a lot of time with this Phoenix Suns team, so kind of walk me through your opinion there. And I think we're going to have the same opinion on this, but let's see if we think that Eric Bledsoe would kind of be a fit at all with the Nets.
Yeah, just in general, I mean, I'm kind of heartbroken, because I think, and this is probably why you see so many journalists being quote-unquote homers, but I'm attached to those Suns team, and especially the one the first year. I wasn't even covering the team this year, but my first year in college at Arizona State, that was the year they won 48 games and were really fun. And Bledsoe was just such a big part of that. He came in came into the state right at the same time I did, and kind of started that era off by hitting a game-winning three against the Utah Jazz. And clearly it hasn't totally worked out, at least in terms of the Suns being good. But throughout 3 years of them sucking and rebuilding, and Bledsoe suffering a season-ending injury, then in his prime, playing the best basketball of his career, being forced to sit 30 games last season, he was nothing but classy throughout all of that. And then coming back this summer, even when the Suns were doing everything they could to get rid of him and teaching those young guys and really working with them throughout the offseason and being at programs that he didn't have to be at and going out in the community and doing charity work, he was just a consummate great player. And now that this situation has devolved into, for lack of a better term, a total shit show, I hope he ends up on a good team. I also feel a little sympathetic to the side of Ryan McDonough, just knowing him I don't want to overstate it, not on a great level personally, but getting to talk to him a couple times a year the last few years, and him coming off as a really genuine, well-intentioned, good guy, and I think an intelligent guy, but has clearly mismanaged some aspects of this team. And I don't know, hiring Earl Watson, even though he's gone now, might prove to be his downfall, because that guy just, for all of his pedigree, and I think he's a very smart basketball guy, was not ready to be an NBA coach. Josh, I know this is extremely long-winded take on the Suns on a Nets podcast, but basically, I'm saddened by the whole situation. And to answer your second question briefly, no, I don't think the Nets should pursue him or be interested in any way. The Suns are looking for real assets for him. The one thing you have to credit with McDonough with is that he wins almost every trade, and even the Goran Dragic trade, where everyone knew Dragic wanted to get out, he got two first round picks, one of which is in 2021 and unprotected. So I don't see him settling. He's going to settle for a little bit less for Bledsoe, but he's not coming out of there without a first round pick or a talented young guy. I don't think the Nets should give up either for Bledsoe.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And thank you for that take. I think our listeners now know if they see any Eric Bledsoe stans on Twitter that they are Gavin Burner accounts.
Yeah. It's I'm on my KD game.
Yeah, we all have to at some point, right?
Yeah, we have a couple out there. We'll see if you guys can find them. All right, we did the boss player of the game. Josh, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the Magic and Cavs game. We might do a rapid reaction to Orlando, or we might do a sum up of those two, since they are on back-to-back nights. And me and Josh are both busy guys, and that way we get to give you guys a little bit of a meatier podcast. I don't want to cheat you guys out. You're listening for 10 minutes. You're really getting into it, and then we're like, and now we're wrapping up. Listen to other podcasts. That's an impersonation of myself being boring. Anyways, Josh, what do you think about those two games?
Yeah, so I think for Orlando, obviously, we just saw the Nets beat the Magic, but I think the key, obviously, is don't let Vucevic score 41 points again.
That's a good one.
That's something, yeah, obviously, you strive not to have happen, but I think we kind of saw the blueprint for beating this Orlando team, and especially with injuries, Elfrid Payton might not play because he hurt his hamstring, I think, against the Nets, and he's on my fantasy team.
Torn hair.
Someone just chopped off his hair. Yeah. And also Aaron Gordon may or may not play. So kind of if that happens, then the Nets will probably have a good shot of winning, just because Orlando isn't that talented to begin with and doesn't have that much depth. As far as the Cavs go, Derrick Rose is going to be out, so it'll be Calderon at point guard. So I think D'Lo obviously needs to have a huge game and really take advantage of that mismatch if the Nets want to have a chance. But it's going to be very hard. Damari Carroll's obviously not done great against LeBron in the past, and the Cavs are a very talented team for a reason. And I think we're going to see Mozgov struggle a lot with Kevin Love at the five.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Carroll's the guy I'm really interested to watch in that Cavs game too, just because it's almost seemed personal with LeBron, and I've talked to you about this, but every time those two meet in the playoffs, and they have the last three seasons, first with Carroll and the Hawks and the last two with him on the Raptors, not necessarily team personnel, but media really hyped Carroll up as like the quote-unquote like LeBron stopper. Like, this was especially the first Hawks season. Like, they have this like long, athletic guy who's also like strong enough to stand up to LeBron to throw at him, and then LeBron takes like a special pleasure in just torching him. Is Carroll at this point, after like that traumatic knee injury, I would say he, even though he's playing really well, a little bit past his athletic prime, and I think he's a solid defender. I don't think he's the ace defender he was early in his career, so I think LeBron's gonna do whatever he wants with him. Fortunately, I think the Cavs will be up by a bit and LeBron will take it a little bit easy.
So do you think that then Kenny Atkinson should start RHJ on LeBron and then maybe Damari Carroll on Jay Crowder?
Yeah, that's absolutely what I'd do, and not just because LeBron takes that personally. I think RHJ, even though I think we both agree that he took a bit of a step back defensively last season, he's the best shot against LeBron just because of how long he is, and I think everyone's noticed he's a little bit bulkier this year, and he's just someone who's willing to put all of his energy into the end to guarding, denying, annoying LeBron. And you know what? You're not going to stop him. If he wants to score, he's going to score on anyone on this Nets team. But if you make him expel a little bit of energy and he has a little bit less on the defensive end, that could lead to the Nets putting up some points. And if you're close in the last few minutes, who knows?
Yeah, I think it's important for the Nets to keep a guy like Damari Carroll fresh as possible all season. And I think one of the ways to do that is maybe giving him the less difficult defensive assignment, especially when you have a very capable player like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson manning the forward position next to him.
All right, absolutely. So we are going to wrap this up with Josh. I didn't even ask you if you have one, but has any nothing's grinded your gears? Wow, life is good in the realm of Josh. Let me just update you guys on his life. He had a great. He went to a great concert this weekend. Bought some new clothes on Monday. A lot of moves happening for Josh.
Yeah, no, I definitely did. Shout out to Umphrey's McGee for giving us a great concert. Incredible set list. This is my first time at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester. And it was a lovely venue. The only thing that bothered me from that concert, though, is that they had a woman walking around with beer. And it's the type of concert where everyone's standing, general admission, a lot of bodies around everywhere. And this woman just coming in with this tank of overpriced. Like, I'm not going to pay $9 for a can of Corona, as much as I wanted another beer at the time and didn't want to leave the crowd. So that was kind of annoying that I had to make room for this woman with a massive tank of beer coming through every 10 minutes or so. But other than that, great show. But so wow. That grinds my gears.
Okay, no, that's a good one. I knew you were like trying clothes on today, so I just had like a picture of like someone at the shop like annoying you or like pushing you to buy something you didn't want to buy, or like a pair of jeans not fitting correctly and then you like wanted to get them but you couldn't. I don't know. I just thought there were like a million scenarios there.
Well, yeah, luckily for me, their sales staff is so like hard to get a hold of at places that I shop at that no real reason for them to bother me.
They don't even have an opportunity to get in your head. Exactly. All right, so we're going to wrap this one up. I highly encourage everyone to check out the Locked On NBA podcast by our boss, David Locke. Ironically, the namesake of this. I don't know the meaning of ironic. I'm just kidding. But yeah, he did a podcast, and he had on the hosts of Locked On Bucks, Locked On Suns, and Locked On Clippers. And I think if you want to get caught up with things around the NBA, that's absolutely the best way to do it. You're not going to get a better local look from guys who cover the team cover the team on a daily basis. There's just not another podcast that's really going to give that to you. And throughout the season, he's going to have everyone on, presumably even us if the Nets do something cool. So just keep your eyes peeled for that. A lot of big moves coming in the Locked On Podcast Network that will be announced over the next couple days and weeks. So we'll be sure to include those on the podcast. But keep your eyes peeled for those as well. For Josh, I'm Gavin. Peace out. We will be back Wednesday or Thursday. Bye.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get two free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get two free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch two lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.